Scrolling for September 20th, 2016. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenplum.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, oh man, you know, all week I did all of my research and I went out and got another car, Chip.
You bought an automobile.
I got another car. I'm so bad. I had my last car for 38 months, which is like a record for me.
Well, how wonderful.
I'm so bad. It's like time to get another car. This one, what's wrong with this one? There's a problem with the oil. Well, can't you change the oil? Yeah, I'm just going to get another car. Terrible.
All right.
There's so many things that you could find out on the internet, and car shopping is one of those things. I found so many different ways to get new information about cars.
Like, give me an example.
Well, there's all sorts of websites that are helping you find the right price. The true car is the one that's on TV. You've seen the commercials for that one. Using that as a tool to know what my price should be when I get to the dealership.
Did you use it?
I did.
Oh, beautiful. And how close was it?
It was very right on.
Okay.
That is a very interesting tool to see data and to analyze what you could have when you were going to the negotiation table.
Very nice.
Knowledge is power.
Well, a lot of it, you can put in the VIN number. Actually, it will give you like the history of it.
Yeah,
so
that
you
too.
You can do Carfax and you can find out if I've had an accident. You have the ability to go in and see what features were added to it. There's also sorts of fun parts to it, and you can understand what you should pay for that for your area, by the way, because one area a car may be worth more than in another area.
That's absolutely true. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And speaking of information that's out there on the internet, you and I got a chance to see the Snowden movie last week. We saw this as a premiere
through Fathom Events.
Fathom Events, which is wonderful. Those of you who haven't taken advantage of those offerings from Fathom Events, go to your local theater, see what they have available. There are so many great movies. I really enjoyed this movie.
This is a really good film. I absolutely enjoyed it. In fact, at the end of the film, we had a question and answer session where we had Snowden. He was actually the real Edward Snowden, came in from Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had Oliver Stone and our two actors who were part of this, who played Edward Snowden and played Edward Snowden's girlfriend.
Right.
During this, Oliver Stone talked a little bit about trying to make a very technical type film and trying to make it a little more human. And the love story was a very big part of it. So I really, when I say I enjoyed this film, that's certainly not telling the you know what went on.
Absolutely.
But this definitely gave a lot of questions to mm-hmm. think about. This along with, what was the movie we saw recently where we talked about the United States and Israel had put together a virus?
That one's called Zero Days, about the virus that infected the nuclear enrichment plant in Iran.
And the gentleman from Iran said, you know, this was an act of war.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I kept thinking through this entire, I mean, that really kind of jarred me when I... But it is true. Espionage against another country seems very warlike. This seems so interesting because what Snowden, the program he developed, it seemed like he had a big part of that, was very much, if it's used against other countries, which it was, it very much could be an act of war. But what ultimately Snowden comes to realize is that he created a different program that kind of took a whole bunch of these types of programs and brought them together to mm-hmm. analyze, that they were watching the United States citizens far more than they were looking at the enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And the data being collected was being collected.
And he could not live with that knowledge. This is an amazing part of this story.
It's not that he just couldn't live with it. Is the United States was denying that they had the ability to do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very divisive issue. We got half the people in the United States, over half, who believe that we are in war right now, that fighting ISIS or any of the supporters of that type of regimes, while it may not be a physical country, is not any different than fighting Nazis during World War II.
We're just using slightly different means, where we were using code breakers in World War II to get that information out of the Nazis. Now we've got all sorts of technology based on that information.
And at one time, I guess if we use World War II as our example, or Korean War or Vietnam War, where we're using machines to go mm-hmm. out and take down these types of people, you know, cyber wars are a lot different. They're about taking out infrastructure mm-hmm. or having the ability to take out infrastructure, as we saw in Zero Days.
Yeah. This is, Snowden movie is such a good movie. As you pointed out, they do give a human story, this girlfriend story that most people didn't know that Edward Snowden had a girlfriend.
Well, she joined him in Moscow.
Yeah, she has moved to Moscow to be with him as a result of all of this.
And in the movie, we learned that she had no idea. She knew he was working on classified materials.
Right.
He could not talk about this, which is for a person who's grown up, I grew up near military bases. This is a heavy burden for young people and mm-hmm. also for people who work in this industry. And he's working in the CIA, with the CIA, NSA, FBI. Maybe I got that wrong. But anyway, he's working with all these covert and very, very secretive projects. That's a lot of burden to mm-hmm. carry. And then
when he makes the decision to split from that group, he does not tell her. He sends her away from Hawaii back to Maryland to her parents. This is a true story.
And makes sure that she doesn't know anything
she doesn't know.
She doesn't know what he was doing.
Nope.
I did enjoy this. Man, this is something I've thought about so much. Steve, if you dumped all the children's records for the public with social security numbers, their addresses, parents, emails, all that other stuff, you'd have a very difficult time defending yourself for doing that. All right. If I did it in my professional life, I was dumping a whole bunch of personal records for clients. Mm-hmm. That certainly would not be, I don't think anyone would look at me and go, oh, you know, that was a reasonable thing to do. Mm-hmm. That, I think people would be shocked. And I mean, we definitely would be looked at as being bad for mm-hmm. doing that. Now, what Snowden did is very interesting, because I'm under the belief that he did a service to the United States.
Okay.
I think this is a very touchy place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And The Guardian, who he worked with, which is the newspaper, they released the initial parts through. They went out of the way in the movie to basically say, listen, if there's anything that will put a person in harm, and what I mean by that is a person on a covert mission or something
right.
like that, to see if they could, I don't know, black it out, to censor it. They worked real hard to try to do their best as far as that was concerned, as far as doing some protection. But the story really was the amount of data being collected on U.S. citizens and the ability, how easy it was for them to get access to it and how they could plug right into your monitor if they needed to.
Your webcam.
If mm-hmm. they needed to get into your phone,
mm-hmm.
The microphone on that is something that they can use. I mean, I don't know how lightly this should be taken. And something Snowden said that I'm going to address right here, because you've said it before in the past, well, I've got nothing to hide. And we learned from Snowden.
This was in the interview after the film.
Yeah, where that phrase came, I've got nothing to hide. You've mm-hmm. got nothing to hide, Steve. Mm-hmm. I've got nothing to hide, right?
Mm-hmm.
That came from Nazi Germany.
Right.
Because obviously,
if you have nothing to hide, then you shouldn't hide anything.
That's mm-hmm. right. And obviously, there was no problems, no consequences to that.
Right.
This is, and then if you recognize what the regime did and Soviet Union did mm-hmm. to their population afterwards, there's a reason we have rights here, and the Bill of Rights are something that we take very seriously. And our current generation of young people have never grown up in an era where their privacy was something that they really were knew to protect.
Mm-hmm.
They're very open. And then as we use social media and things like that, we're very open about giving all of our details away.
Mm-hmm.
Where were you last week?
Yeah.
Eating ice cream. here's a picture of that ice cream.
And here's the GPS data to show exactly where you were, because you are identified by your cellular device.
In addition to that, I walk every morning. I don't think my... I do deviate from the path I take, mm-hmm. but I don't think my deviations are that different. Mm-hmm. I mean, if somebody needed to find me at a certain time of morning, I think that with a group of three or four people, they could not only just meet me on my walk, mm-hmm. they can meet me on pretty much any walk because they all start similarly.
Right.
So, you know, this privacy stuff...
Makes you think.
It is something to really consider.
Mm-hmm.
And Edward Snowden seems to be the model person to use or poster child
for
that.
He is certainly the poster child for this right now. He is certainly in the middle of this. And that was very interesting to me watching this movie, is we're watching a movie about something that is ongoing. This is a conversation that is happening right now for real in our world.
Let's talk a little bit about the public relations part of this, because of how Snowden is portrayed, mm-hmm. not just in the movie, but anyway, his portrayal pretty much anytime we see him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got very much a Steve Jobs kind of vibe to him, doesn't he?
He does. It's pretty striking to look at him and to see how he thinks through questions before he answers them. And he has just that smirk of knowledge on his face, so similar to what Steve Jobs had.
Well, I think the glasses have a little mm-hmm. bit to do with it, this idea of a person in touch with, you know, hidden knowledge, maybe. You know, Jobs, when he released something, there was always like this expectation. He goes, I'm going to introduce you to water. And all of a sudden, everybody's like, ooh, water. Whoa. It's great.
And well, one more thing.
That's right. But Snowden seems very much on that too. Now, he seems, I mean, there's no doubt that he must be brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
He developed two major programs.
I think we can agree that at his brilliance, whether we agree about what he did was good or bad for his society, we can agree that this is a brilliant man.
Well, this week there have been a couple of pushes. Edward Snowden definitely has asked for a pardon.
Mm-hmm.
He's asked Obama directly, it sounds like, for a pardon before he leaves office.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Obama's going to be the person to give it to him.
I don't know if he's going to be capable of doing that with the public sentiment being so 50-50 on this topic of whether yeah. he's a traitor to our country or not.
Or, you know, or a liberator. Mm-hmm. And then the other part is there's petitions online and also plenty of articles asking for pardons too.
Mm-hmm.
This is a tough spot because there's no doubt that what he did was treasonous. But what we need to ask is, did we get some enlightenment from this? And
when we, in that sentence, are the American people, are we getting knowledge that we are being monitored, and is that a problem for us, the American people? That's the real big question. Is it treasonous to show the public something that the government is doing in secret? Yes. Yes, it is.
Let's leave this with the last part about it. You can say, well, you know, you have really nothing to hide, and could this stuff be used against you? I mean, you're just an average person.
Mm-hmm.
One of the parts of the story of this movie was a person who really was, looked very clean, had a very reasonable family, worked a reasonable job, but he got railroaded through the ability to manipulate information or use that information against him.
Mm-hmm.
And Snowden, in the interview afterwards, says, we all have something to hide. It's not that you're super secretive or something like that, but through that, we had a guy, his family was destroyed.
Right.
And Snowden really...
On purpose.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. And it was to help...
Some other piece of the puzzle of the government interaction with some other government.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. So there's a lot to think about in this movie. We have to recognize this is an Oliver Stone film.
And which means it's going to be full of intellectual thought, that the audience is going to have to use their brain and add to this story and make their own decisions.
I was going to say there's a lot of propaganda in it, but
that's one way to put it.
Because Oliver Stone definitely has a way of looking at the world.
Mm-hmm.
And many times I agree with him, and many times I disagree with him. And once again, this is a movie, and mm-hmm. it's meant to sell and sensationalize things.
Sure.
But I absolutely ate it up. I am very sympathetic to what Snowden did. But, you know, I also think that we are the bastion of liberty in the world. And I would be very sad to see that the U.S. experiment not be very strong. Mm-hmm. So this is right on the forefront of many of the topics we should think about and discuss. And
do more research on. So I really think that you should see this movie. I think you should be knowledgeable about the issues that came up as a result of what Edward Snowden has done. This is one piece of that puzzle. I do agree with you that Oliver Stone has his agenda, and Certainly this is not the only story, but this is a great place to start to know more about what's really happening.
I think so, too. I highly recommend this.
Opening this week, we've got a couple of movies. You found some movies that are, frat house movies.
Oh, the fraternity. Oh, there's going to be lots of them. So let's go Delta through them real house. Quick. That's right. So we usually, Michael Lewis always said about Wall Street, his book Liar's Poker, he goes, or the movie Wall Street, he goes, which is Oliver Stone, isn't it? Yes, it is. Which he said, we're going to take it as a cautionary tale, and people took it as a manual on how to do things.
Right.
So Animal House was a cautionary tale that we were supposed to laugh at, but people took it as a movie to emulate.
Right.
So we've got Goat, which seems like a very serious type of movie.
Absolutely.
It looks like it's about hazing. Mm-hmm. Hazing's a very sensitive topic for fraternities right now because people have died. People have been hurt. And even football. There was Outside the Lines this last week actually went through football teams and the hazing rituals they do. But this is about what we think of as traditional fraternities on campus, a university campus. We got our next movie, was it Total Frat Movie, which has Tom Green in it. So you know it's going to be very serious.
Oh, boy. That's what the world needs, is another Tom Green movie.
Well,
I wonder if his naked rear end appears in this film. I'll be willing to bet that it does.
Well, this one seems a little bit more on the silly side. But
really?
But it looks like it's going to be dealing with the same thing.
Yeah.
Fraternities and hazing.
Hmm. Probably the other side of the argument on that one. You found one called Audrey and Daisy. This is the story of online bullying and the effects that can have on a young person.
Yeah, this is looks like a limited release.
It's a documentary.
It's going to be on Netflix also.
Mm-hmm.
So that looks like a pretty good film to watch.
There's important topics.
There's no great big films being released this week that have interest to me.
We're not there yet.
Oh, well, they're coming.
When the season changes and it gets a little bit colder, then we'll see the really big releases. You found some really good ones here, though. There's one called The Dressmaker. This is about a woman in rural Australia, and she makes beautiful dresses and there you go.
Well, it looks a little bit more than that. We have a person who worked maybe in New York as a dress designer and then went back to her rural roots in Australia. And it talks a little bit maybe about how, small towns,
mm-hmm.
and maybe how dressing differently could make people feel differently about themselves.
There you go.
So we have IT.
IT.
Which,
not ET.
IT come home.
IT. This is like a 21st century thriller where the IT guy is going to come into your smart home and he's going to invade your privacy using all of those cameras and microphones that you have installed in your smart home.
And this is going to be starring James Bond, right?
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan. Remington Steele himself.
If we could all be as suave, right?
Oh, I would love to hang out with a Pierce Brosnan one day. But yeah, he's the one who's being invaded by the IT guy. Pierce Brosnan does not play an IT guy. That's in his contract somewhere. But this is like the 21st century cable guy, where you have this guy invading your personal space, invading your lifestyle, and what he could do to really disrupt your things.
Sure. And this is where you consider a person working on your behalf, but ultimately maybe not. This becomes a thriller where they mm-hmm. kind of turn it and they work it against you.
It's preying on those fears that people have of these devices. People don't understand how these devices work. They just do some magic.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the bigger ones. We have the Magnificent Seven that's coming out.
There you go. You got the remake of the Magnificent Seven. Just what the world needed. We had Ben-Hur 2 weeks ago, and now we've got the Magnificent Seven.
Probably not. All right, so then we have Storks.
Yep, that's the big cartoon that's coming out. You've probably seen the commercials for that. It's a children's show about how babies are made, and there's a Cabbage Patch, I'm sure, somewhere in there.
I'm sure there is. The Stork will deliver lots of stuff, right?
No worries. It brings us to our book of the week, and I got a chance to sit down with author Mark Nobleman this week. He showed up at my school and talked to all my students about his work, and I got to talk to him about how he was researching Bill Finger, the co-creator of Batman.
Oh, there you go. So Bob Kane is who we usually associate with being the creator of Batman. Mm-hmm. Bob Kane made the agreement with what eventually became DC Comics or DC Entertainment. Mm-hmm. So everything says created by Bob Kane. Well, Bill Finger was the guy that was hired underneath him to put together all the stuff we know about Batman.
Right.
And this is a book about that.
And how he did not get credit for that in the broader sense for 75 years. And now Batman versus Superman movie last year had a byline created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. It's a very interesting conversation. Sitting here with Mark Nobleman, who is an author. You've written 75 books at this point?
Yes. Wow. Some of them are very short and simple. So that's why it added, the number seems large. They didn't all take the same amount of time.
Right. Your big claim to fame is you are the man who discovered the secret, Batman's secret, that we didn't know for almost 75 years. The fact that there's a man named Bill Finger who was very instrumental in creating Batman.
Yes. I didn't discover Bill, but I was the first person to put him at the center of the Batman story where he deserves to be. And I did that by writing a book about him, and I was also the first person to take the time to find out more about him beyond Batman, who this guy was before Batman, after Batman, what his family was like, what he was like personally, what happened after he died, and put all this together into this book to try to spread his name far and wide and make him as mainstream as the character that he created. I believe that creators should be linked to their creations, and we should always know who created the works that we love.
And so that's Bill, the boy wonder, the secret co-creator of Batman. That's
yes.
The title of the book, and we can find that on Amazon and anywhere else.
Any bookstore that you prefer can order it for you or might have it, and certainly any online bookstore as well.
Doesn't take any detective to find that.
It should, and I hope it doesn't.
The world's greatest detective. I found a book.
Yeah. It's supposed to be easier than that.
So Bob Kane is credited for the creation of Batman. Where does Bill Finger fit into all of that?
From the first day, it was Bill and Bob together. Bob was the one who brought the idea to Bill to do a character named Batman, but almost everything else that came out of that first meeting was Bill's, and it was essentially the costume.
Mm-hmm.
So even though Bill was the writer, he was the visual architect as well. Bob was the one who took this idea into the company by himself without probably even mentioning Bill and sold the idea, and then went back to Bill and proposed an arrangement through which they would both work on Batman, but only Bob would get credit and paid, and then Bob would pay Bill a portion of this money. This was something that was done somewhat commonly in those days. This is the late 30s, early 40s in the comic book industry. Doesn't make it right, doesn't make it understandable to a modern ear. We believe everybody should get credit for what he does. But back then, some people were just very eager to work that they would accept these terms. And also, back then, I don't think most of these guys would have thought for a second that these characters would be around in 75 years, let alone five.
Less be as huge as they are today.
They couldn't have predicted that.
All right.
So I think part of it was, I'm just going to get a paycheck and do something work that I like, and it doesn't really matter about that. But you know, over time it became clear to Bill and others that he should be credited properly.
So let's do the list. Commissioner Gordon.
First issue. Yeah, Bill wrote the first story that had Bruce Wayne, Batman, and Commissioner Gordon. Again, Bill designed the costume. Bill went on to write the first stories of Robin, the Joker, the Penguin, Catwoman, the Scarecrow. He named Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson. He named Gotham City. Wrote the first stories with the Batmobile, the Batcave, and the Batarang. He wrote Batman's origin, which is the reason I think Batman endures. And he nicknamed Batman the Dark Knight, And that's just the start.
That's a huge list. That's amazing that we didn't know this, that the public didn't know this for so long. You did a lot of research to find this story, and the story of you researching is a really great story in and of itself.
Well, if you do research right, it is adventure, and it does make a story of it unto itself. So that's why I am mystified when I talk with kids who think research is boring. I think there is a perception of that. Part of it is that it might not be presented that way, but I think that it can be. And I'm not blaming teachers either, because sometimes you don't know it until you do it. I couldn't have told you a dynamic research story until this happened to me. So if you've lived through it, it becomes much easier. But that is the potential for all stories. The more you dig, the more you might find something that other people haven't found. And we all know how ears perk up when you have something new to say.
And we're going to see a movie version of your story of finding out all of this information and doing this research and being the Indiana Jones of your research field. That
Indiana
documentary.
Jones of Batman, that's funny.
The Indiana Jones of Batman. I think you should run with that.
Yeah, I'll work, maybe make a t-shirt. Yes, in October 2016, there will be a documentary out called Batman and Bill, which is produced by Hulu, the online streaming company. There's talk of a theatrical release as well. I don't have the details of that yet, but it will for sure be on Hulu Online. And it is the first documentary, of course, on Bill Finger. And as far as I know, it's the first documentary ever on a nonfiction picture book. That's just something that hasn't happened that I know about. So again, just it's less about me, but more about the power of this character and how anything new about something so iconic is of interest to a lot of people.
And your latest book is not about Batman, not about comic books. You write all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Tell us about your latest.
My latest is a novel called Brave Like My Brother. It is a novel told in letters between a 20-year-old soldier in the United Kingdom and his 10-year-old brother back home in Cleveland, actually, where Superman came from, too. And the whole story unfolds through this correspondence. And the older brother is a reluctant soldier, as I think many were. And part of the story is to show that in war, the soldiers, especially then in World War II, the soldiers were also the historians. We learned so much about the war, not through the official documentation or the books that were written later, but by these people's private correspondence, a lot of which survives. So that is so special to me, these anecdotal little stories that play out over the backdrop of these huge events. So that's what this book is doing. And at the core of it, it's really just about this cool mission, the secret mission that these two guys were sent on, which is something involving something called the Ghost Army.
Ooh. Yeah. Very cool.
Which I didn't make up. That's a real World
that's
War II
a real,
event.
That's yes. a real event
that's
that, you,
a real event that
you've
just
written.
Used as the backdrop for my story.
Very cool. And you've got one coming out in the next few months in March?
In March, my next book will be out. It's a picture book called The Chupacabra Ate the Candelabra. Not World War II, not Batman. It is a comedy, as I hope the title indicates, and it's about this mythical creature called the Chupacabra, which is well known in the South, and by that I mean the South in America, and also South America itself, and mm-hmm. Central America. And it's the first picture book about this creature, at least the first comedy. So that one I'm really excited about, because it's a real departure from what people know me for, I think, so far.
Very good. Thank you very much for talking with us. Again, if you want to get any of Mark's books, go to our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. Go to our show notes. We'll have all the information. Is there a way for our audience to contact you? Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter, Mark with a C, T, Nobleman on Twitter. And I have a blog, which is for everybody. And I tell behind-the-scenes stories of my books and my research. I tell stories about my travels and my experience at different schools and other various things in between and around. So it's an eclectic mix of things. But yeah, Twitter's probably the easiest for most people.
Very good. Thank you very much,
Thanks
sir.
Thanks for having me.
Brings us to our appetite or app of the week, and you've been working on your lawn.
Well, this is a good example of what can be really good about creating an app.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about. This is called My Lawn from Scotts.
My Lawn from Scotts.
A complete guide to grass care. So, as all of us, the perfectly manicured lawn is so important to us. Now, most of us just want to keep weeds out so our neighbors don't say anything. And then we want to be able to know how to take care of our lawn. Mm-hmm. And Scott historically has been a grass care company. They sell seeds and fertilizers and stuff like that. And While that, what they've done in the past has made things easy. They had four applications a year. They were different colors. One was for spring, one was for summer, one was for winter, and one was for, you know, it just went around and you followed it. Well, this one goes a little bit further, and this is why I like this app and why a single use app can be very powerful. Most of us are not people who are greenskeepers. Most of us are not people who work on large land where it has that we have to keep green.
So I got that going for me.
That's right. So exactly, you're out there hunting gophers. All right, so what it does is you tell it through a series of questions and pictures. Really, it's pictures.
It is a visual app.
What type of lawn do you have? Mm-hmm. Do you have empty patches in it? Do you have a lot of weeds in it? Mm-hmm. Is it brown? Is it green? All that fancy stuff. And once you tell it there, it'll tell you, oh, and this is the fertilizer you use. So you go to your local store, you grab that one, you put it down. When they tell you to put it down.
A very regimented system that they say, here's the chemistry. We have discovered the right chemistry here. Do this.
In addition to that, if you do not know the lot size of your piece of little property, it goes to, I guess, Google Earth or whatever it is, brings it down to your property. It will, you measure it with your finger, it really? Will tell you, oh, and this is the size bag you need.
Wow.
So that is pretty awesome.
That is.
And you basically, it will track how much rain you got had in your area. Mm-hmm. I think you have to have an inch of rain a week to have a good lawn or whatever. And if you don't have an inch, it'll tell you to go out and water your lawn.
Hmm.
My whole point of this is I love this app. Not because, one, I'm not a greenskeeper. I'm not the greatest person at putting this stuff down. But it made it so stupidly easy.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, just follow these rules, and the chances that your lawn will be pretty good are pretty high up there.
Does it send you notifications when it's time to apply the...
It does.
Oh, that's great.
It's very similar, like the Nest will send you an a notification saying, it's time to change that filter.
Nice.
Well, you get a little notification that says, hey, it's time to put down your winterizer.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it down this last week, and then it will send me another one. I think it's at the end of October. Saying it's time to put down whatever the second application of it. It'll send me one, I guess, in February. It'll say it's time to put down the spring stuff. It's time to seed. It's time to do this. It makes it so easy.
That's awesome.
And what I want other app providers to do is to create other areas in my life that are equally as chaotic and create them and make them as easy as this. Because
so if you were, say, out of this fertilizer, you would want maybe an app that would automatically ship it to your house at the right time. Or the toilet paper or the detergent or whatever it is that you need at the right times.
A lot of this is like going to the dentist,
mm-hmm.
And they clean your teeth and whatever it is, and then they set your next appointment. And then if you go and you get your physical for your doctor, and then they go ahead and set the next appointment for you. In other parts of your life, you come in, you get your oil changed in your automobile,
mm-hmm.
and they went ahead and set it up for you. I mean, these types of automated type things
mm-hmm.
just make your life easier. Easy.
That's it.
And then the question you eventually, are you too controlled? That could be something you could say. But what you're really saying is parts of your life, like fertilizing, you don't really want to think about. You just want to kind of, this is what to do, and this is will generally get me where I need to go. And if it fell apart and didn't work the way you needed to, you knew you needed to call an expert in mm-hmm. at that point. So good stuff.
Brings us to our Now the News, where Amazon is happy to send you whatever toilet paper and detergent that you want when you want it, because they are going to put a microphone in your house that you can ask for all of those sundries and have them shipped to your house as soon as you need them.
Now, Echo was released, what, last fall about this time?
Yep, this is about a year old, the Amazon Echo device. It was,
and how much was it?
It was $180 for the first generation of the Amazon Echo, and Amazon has introduced the second generation this year. It's called the Echo Dot, and they priced it at $50.
So that seems quite a savings mm-hmm. from the original for early adopters.
Early adopters are really going to pay the price, and those of us who didn't pick up an Amazon Echo, I've ordered one at $50. I'll tell you that much.
So with this, you could say, hey, order me some jelly beans.
Mm-hmm.
But it also does other things, doesn't it?
Yes, this is one of those personal devices where it can read the news to you, it can play NPR reports to you, it can tell you about the weather, it can turn on your lights. This is the beginning of the smart home revolution.
And this is not the only one that's coming out this month, is it?
That's right. This one's coming out on October 20th. You can pre-order them now on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com, just like I did. But the Google Home device is rumored to be shipping on October 4th. So that's before the Amazon Echo 2.0.
And do you know what potentially could be the difference between the Amazon Echo and the Google?
Well, the focus of Amazon is to sell you sundries. The focus of Google is to know more about you, to sell your data to advertisers and to advertise things to you that you could buy through the device. So, yes, this is all about commerce.
So Edward Snowden loves this.
Edward Snowden.
He says this is a great idea.
Is not going to put a bunch of microphones in his hideaway in Moscow.
You've got nothing to hide.
Cover your webcam with a Band-Aid as soon as possible.
Well, there you go. You're going to be walking the razor's edge, figuring out which one to do.
Right. Which is the least of the evil microphones in your home. I really like talking to my phone, having my phone do things for me while I'm driving, for instance.
Sure.
It's very important to me that I am able to do those things while doing other things. And I think that I want a home that I can talk to Star Trek style. When I say, computer, turn the lights on, I want that to be automated, just like the Grass app that you said is so easy.
Well, here's the interesting part. All right, so the iPhone 7 was announced last week, mm-hmm. or actually 2 weeks ago. And with that, you got those funky speakers that are going to be hanging out your ears that look like toothbrushes.
Yes.
But what if you didn't want that? What if you wanted to answer a phone, say, with your fingers or something?
Yeah, there's a very interesting Kickstarter going on right now. This is a bone conductive wristwatch band. So on your wristwatch, and it doesn't have to be a smartwatch, it can be a regular old wristwatch. This is just replacing the band. You press a button on the wristwatch band, and you stick your finger on the bone near your ear, and the sound travels through the bones in your wrist, through the bones in your finger, into the auditory canal, and you can hear everything that happens just by you putting your finger on your face.
So through Bluetooth, this wristband is talking to the phone.
Correct.
So this works just like when I get phone calls now through my computer.
Right.
But this is basically using your hand to create sort of the headset
uh-huh.
for the phone to try to, I guess, instead of walking around with funky things in your ears.
Right, you got the funky thing on your wrist, and the sound echoes through your bones into your ear canal.
This is interesting. Isn't this crazy? And what's nice about it is it seems like a very natural movement for mm-hmm. you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, eventually we'll all have these earrings we'll be wearing in our ear. Maybe they're like big black plugs that they'll put in her ear.
That's what I've got. I've got the Moto Hint. That's what I've got is that plug that goes in my ear.
No, I'm thinking more along the hipster. It works at Target. Me wearing
the gauges?
Yeah, those great big earrings. Yeah.
There you go.
Well, there you go. They can hang in your ear. Or you can do something like this. Use your finger.
Yeah. They have sold over 5,000 of these already. They wanted $50,000. They've already raised almost $1 million on this project.
This seems very interesting, and it seems very natural. And natural is a very good way of designing how we want to use our technology.
That's right. If you're caught using your phone in the UK two times while you're driving, the UK has passed a law that says they can take your driver's license away because you're being too distracted. I don't know if that counts if your bones are the ones that are bringing the sound to your ear or not.
Oh, I don't know either.
I don't know.
But this is a very real issue here. Mm-hmm. Every once I drive up and down the highways getting towards Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you see some swerving at times. And, you know, this is kind of like drunk driving. It becomes a real issue.
It is really a bigger problem than drunk driving because there's so many more people who have phones in their cars than are drunk driving.
There was a nice little, I don't know, study I was showing. It was a guy who thought he was the best at multitasking. I can do 12 things at once.
Mm-hmm.
And what they really, when they studied this guy, and it was a study on multitasking, is you can do 12 things really poorly,
right,
or you can do one thing very good.
Right.
So every time that the thing I got from that is every time I think I can do three or four things at once, two things at once,
mm-hmm,
I can't do anything. Yep. I need to focus on the task at hand. And if the task at hand is driving, then eating and drinking and
reading
playing with
newspaper,
my phone, putting lipstick on, whatever
petting
that
the dog,
is.
Yelling at the children. Yeah. All of these things are distracting driving, and it is the most dangerous thing that we're doing in our society right now, in my opinion.
And until we get self-driving cars, well.
I'm ready. I am ready for the self-driving car. That was one of the things that I looked at in buying my car this week, was I looked at all the latest technology, and I was not able to afford the latest technology, and it's not good enough yet. I need to wait 5 more years.
Yeah, we're still in a tweener stage, uh-huh, right now. All right, so if you were watching the NFL, let's say, on Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter.
In fact, they announced it last year,
uh-huh,
and they had the first game last Thursday.
Yep, Thursday Night Football. Everybody, come around the computer and watch Thursday Night Football. It's streaming on Twitter. My 10-year-old, who's really into football, came home on Thursday, said, I want to watch the football game on Twitter. So he went to the computer. He pulled it up. It was very easy. They made it very clear that that's where you click to get to the football game. It came up on the computer screen. He asked me immediately, can we move this to the big TV so I can sit on the couch and watch this game? I said, mm-hmm, yes, I have that sort of technology available. I said, or you can go to that same big TV and put on CBS, because that game was on CBS, the sure, NFL Network, and on Twitter.
Well, I do know also Apple TV just added the Twitter app.
For things like this.
And I agree. I think initially, I don't think reading stuff off.
Reading Twitter is going to
change on your
be wonderful
screen
on the big screen, yeah. But, same thing with Facebook.
Sure, and mm-hmm, but it does seem like that this is a nice test. Mm-hmm. There wasn't that many people, relatively speaking,
it was
who
a
turned in.
Huge drop from last year. It was a 27% drop in viewership on CBS and the NFL Network versus the first game last year, and about 2 million people were tuning in via Twitter. If you don't want to watch sports, if you want to watch Star Wars, Chip.
Steve wants to watch a lot of Star Wars.
Then you're in luck, because Turner Broadcasting has purchased the broadcast rights for the old Star Wars, the six. There are six Star Wars movies, I've heard from my friends.
Rumors have said that there are six. There are these things called the prequels?
I've heard that somewhere. But anyway, they have the rights to broadcast those for the next 8 years. They paid $275 million, and they are going to put those things on TBS and TNT ad nauseum.
Well, it will maybe take the place of Roadhouse, maybe the Shawshank Redemption. The Green Mile. They seem to play those quite a bit.
That's what cable is for, is watching those three movies.
And then you get insightful conversations like sand. It's coarse.
We can replace it.
It's coarse.
Yeah. We've got that coming up. So whenever you're flipping through the channels on your cable, you'll get to Star Wars pretty much 24/7 at this point, I think.
Well, if you turn on cable right now,
mm-hmm,
chances are you will definitely find Lord of the Rings.
Really?
Maybe all three movies playing at the same time. You just pick your flavor. Just go right into one of them.
Can you tell the difference?
No.
Okay.
No. But that's playing over and over and over again. The Shawshank Redemption, I've probably seen, as a person who doesn't watch a lot of television, I've probably seen more times than I care to admit. Very good film.
It's a great film.
But it really seeps in about the 15th, 20th time you watch it.
I bet it does.
And I just love Roadhouse. I cannot tell you how wonderful that movie is.
It might be hard to find now that Star Wars is going to take over the cable.
I'll have to get the Criterion collection.
You have to have it on a plastic disc and take it out on Christmas. The Force Awakens is right now on Stars, so you can see that on Stars. And the new films, the going forward films, Rogue One and everything coming after that, those are destined for Netflix.
And that's because Disney owns.
Disney has made those deals to make that happen. But those old Star Wars movies, you're going to flip through the channels and see them.
I'm really curious about this, because I do think that it may kill these films.
I agree.
Because, I mean, if we think about It's a Wonderful Life and The mm-hmm. Christmas Story, the reason why they may hold up over year for years, they're only available on special times.
That's why I watch Star Wars on Christmas.
And, you know, The Wizard of Oz would be another good example. Mm-hmm. It shows up once in a while. The Sound of Music shows up once in a while.
It's a special event. It's not ad nauseum. It might very well kill the old movies because they're always available. If it's always available, you might not always want to watch it.
You'll turn the channel on and you'll say, no! Yeah,
not sand. I hate sand. I love you. Terrible dialogue.
You like sports, don't you?
I do like sports. Sports are my favorite.
Especially when they're like robots, like
especially
killing
nerd
each other.
Sports. Yeah. Nerd sports. When BattleBots came back, I was so excited to watch BattleBots again. BattleBots is so exciting. It's all of the drama without any of the bloodshed.
Well, this is like BattleBots, but it's different.
Yes. ESPN has picked up the Drone Racing League in 2016. They are going to be flying drones at over 100 miles an hour in a really intricate course and trying to be the best drone pilots available.
But the real issue is we have a professional drone racing league.
Absolutely.
Right now.
Absolutely. Other than the U.S. military.
Pretty soon we're going to have like Pacific Rim. We're going to have like these big robots fighting each other,
yeah,
too.
BattleBots, real life BattleBots size, Pacific Rim size. I'm ready. I am ready. Find Ultraman. Let's go.
Well, there we go. We got a racing league that's available right now. ESPN's going to have it. We're going to have to be able to watch that. And then we'll have BattleBots. So what can you say, man? I think sports has changed for Steve's pleasure.
And the esports, those of you who are watching other people playing video games for fun, I'm not one of those people, but there's a lot of people watching esports right now. The sporting world is in the midst of a change, there's no doubt.
It's very interesting. You know, many of the universities have these teams playing mm-hmm. these computer games competitively against each other.
That's right.
There you go.
That's it. That's amazing. I think we have enough information to survive another week if the big robots don't come.
Only if we can come back next week.
I think we can come back next week and fight the big robots and be excited by all this stuff. Except for maybe the Star Wars news. I wasn't too keen on that. I'm still going to watch Star Wars on Christmas. That's the special time to watch Star Wars. If you need more information, there's so many ways to find more information. You can give us a text or a call. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. Find all the information. Get more knowledge. Know what you're looking at. Go see that Snowden movie. I really think that you should go do that.
I think if you don't go see the Snowden movie, they'll know that you didn't go see it.
They already know.
They already know.
thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflug.
We'll see you in the future.